Make Do Suburban Fireman podcast, where we're keeping it real, talking all things suburban fire service with your hosts, Nick Peppard and Sean Duffy. This podcast is done in partnership with the Rust Belt Jakes and Build Your Culture. So grab a drink, pull up a chair, and let's go. All right, and we're back. Episode 45 of the Make Do Suburban Fireman podcast. I am your host, Nick Peppard, joined today with a special guest, Jeremy Mathis, hailing out of the great state of Georgia. What's going on, Jeremy?
Not a lot, man. Just getting ready for the holidays and having a fun time preparing for all that comes with that.
Yeah. That's like it or not, it's here.
That's right. It's up fast upon us.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I know we were just talking before the show started here about the weather, and you guys are getting a little northern weather this morning down in the 20s, right?
Yeah, 27 degrees when I took the kids to school, and that's a little bit unseasonably warm for this time of year. We're not used to that till probably mid-February or so. So we had to break the jackets out a little bit earlier than expected.
Yeah, I know. Obviously being up here in Wisconsin, it started getting cold a few weeks ago, and we got snow on the ground right now. It's about 17 degrees, and it's definitely feeling Christmassy, but the irony is it's all going to melt by the weekend because it's supposed to be up around 40. So we're not quite there yet, but the festivities are definitely upon us. Thanksgiving was great. Had to work, but family came up, got to have a big dinner at the firehouse, which one of my favorite things about working in the fire service is the family aspect of it. And we'll get more into that. We talk about balance later in the show, but hopefully you guys had a great Thanksgiving as well.
Yeah, we did. We had a good time. Just kept it really low key this year, just wife and the kids and I. We didn't do the multiple family dinner. So he said, if we're going to do it here, if you guys want to show up, you're more than welcome to. And just really kept it low key with us, my wife and the girls. So
honestly, man, sometimes that's the best way to be. Last year, Christmas, my brother had to work, and then my dad got COVID and they were down. So we ended up having a really low key Christmas at the house, and man, it was so nice, honestly, not to be helter skelter, run from this place to that place and just do everything at home. And man, I tell you, it just reminded me sometimes that, we get so caught up in the holiday that we fail to really enjoy it and just what it's all about. And taking time with family is really the most important thing. And, I don't know. I haven't had a Christmas like that in a long time. So when, having that last year, I was like, man, this is kind of nice.
Certainly. The ability to just slow down with everything that we have going on nowadays with schedules, and everyone is so busy, just to be able to slow down and relax is very welcome for sure.
Yeah. No doubt. So give me a little bit of background on yourself. Let's kind of rewind a little bit and talk about what got you into the fire service, kind of your journey through the fire service to where you're at today, and some of the things that you've encountered on your path. And we'll get into it's kind of a two-part thing, but just get the background and then we'll jump into some of the things you've experienced in your career there.
Sure. So I've been in Georgia my whole life. I grew up here. I live approximately 40 miles from where I was born. I work in the town that I grew up in, so that's really an awesome experience, knowing the hometown feel of it. I've been in the fire service for 24 years now. I started off as a volunteer firefighter for our mutual aid organization, Newton County Fire Service, and really enjoyed it so much as an 18-year-old kid that I was like, this is what I want to do. And so I didn't have the real background of my father was a firefighter or anything like that. Turns out I did have a couple of uncles and things that were distant that were in the fire service, and now I have two other cousins that are in the fire service as well and another neighboring department. So it's been a little bit of a family affair, even though it didn't really start out that way for me. What got me into the fire service, honestly, was we were at church one Wednesday night, I believe it was. And one of the fellow members of the congregation was like, hey, you're 18 now, you want to come and be a volunteer firefighter? And I had no idea what it was about. I didn't have any aspirations at all, like I said. And going to that first meeting, the first night, they put me in gear and we did hose evolutions, and the camaraderie and the teamwork that they put into that, teaching somebody that had absolutely no clue what was going on, the brotherhood aspect of the fire service was very real, very early for me. And so I fell in love with it at that moment and had no plans. I was straight out of high school, wasn't in college yet, didn't do anything like that. I was just working some odd and end job. And that sort of set me on my path for the fire service. I've been with Covington now for 20 years. I'm a captain there, right on an engine company. I'm at our headquarters station. We have three companies that respond out of that location. So we do have a battalion chief there. He's sort of in and out. That's where his office is, but he's not really does much with, he doesn't really do a whole lot with the day-to-day operations of that particular station. That's sort of my wheelhouse as the captain of the station. And putting together, 12 personalities and trying to keep all of that in line can be quite the hassle, but it's a fun experience, of course, working with like-minded individuals. And I've got a really good group of firefighters that I do work with. So I'm just enjoying the ride for now.
Yeah. So a little bit of, for the people listening to the show, where is Covington exactly? And what's the makeup of, population, personnel, as far as total workforce and things like that? What is your normal response on a rig? What kind of department are you guys? Are you guys running ALS, BLS, any kind of specialized stuff like that?
Sure. Covington is 35 miles east of Atlanta. We're a metro department. We are a smaller department. We're like on the outer cusp of metro Atlanta. Mm-hmm. It gets fairly rural. And once you get beyond that, we have all the metro problems that you may say. We have the influx of people for the day for a workforce population. At night, we have a population of around 20,000. So it's a medium-sized town, if you will. As far as that goes, we respond, like I said, we have two stations currently looking to build a third and fourth right behind that. We respond four on an apparatus with full staffing. Three is our minimum for every piece that we have, two engines, truck company, and then a heavy rescue. And we're sort of an all hazards organization, but being a smaller department, we have to cross train and do different disciplines. So even though you're riding an engine today, doesn't mean that you're not going to have to do something in the technical rescue realm. So a little bit of jack of all trade, if you will.
Yeah, that's, quintessential suburbia, right? That is what most of us run into of having to do a little bit of everything. As far as call load, what's your typical call load throughout the year? I mean, do you guys see peaks when it, cooler season, or maybe during the summer when people are more active? What does your call load look like?
Sure. Ebbs and flows like everywhere else. Where with the cold snap that we're currently experiencing, people are turning the heaters on the first time. So a lot of smells and bells going on. Mm-hmm. We have had a couple of small fires as a result of people not cleaning out their fireplace and chimney fires, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Over the last week or so. Summertime, this town is hopping. We're actually have a very big filming presence. And so the tourism industry is huge. We've had probably 250,000 people visit our town just for the tourism aspect of it. Many different things were filmed for you and I in the heat of the night, or the Dukes of Hazzard. Mm-hmm. Things like that were filmed on our town square for some of the younger firefighters, the Vampire Diaries, Remember the Titans, the movie, all kinds of things. So it's pretty cool to see that aspect of things. We just opened up a large movie studio a year or so ago on the outer edges of our city, and they're already doubling in size with the projects that they have coming in. Their footprint's going to be twice what it is currently. So really good opportunities for people to come and work. And then for the fire service, we get to be a part of some of those projects as well, providing apparatus, providing personnel for standby. So it's been a unique addition to what our standard looks like.
Yeah, no, that's pretty neat experience for sure. Not too many people get to be part of stuff like that. So pretty neat. You mentioned you get to kind of work where you grew up, and that, man, there's something to be said for that, right? There's something to be said for, you know the people you're serving, right? You know the people in the town. And certainly that adds a certain personal element to it. When you go to work, it's not just your job. Like, it is your job, but it's also your community. And, that's something, I don't live where I work now, but for years and years I did. And I can tell you, there is a certain extra level of personal commitment that goes into it when you live where you work. When that's your town, that's those are your folks, those are your people. I just feel like it is definitely easier to take that personal ownership, if you will, when it's the town you grew up in, it's the people you know.
Sure, certainly. And like you said, the opportunity to run calls on and help the people that helped raise you as you were growing up is a huge responsibility to make sure that you're doing right and you're living up to the things that they taught you and hope that they hoped that you become. So it's really sometimes it can be challenging when you run the difficult EMS calls and you do those things. And it's not always the best outcome. You know what's going on. So that can be tough, especially if someone does happen to pass, of course, and then you show up to the funeral afterwards and you have that conversation with the family and all that. And so that can be a difficult part of that living, working where you serve or where you grew up rather. But for the most part, you know, it is very rewarding when you respond to somebody and you are able to help them out and the outcome is positive. It's a good feeling to know that you are doing something for the community that helped to raise you.
Yeah, man, I love it. I love it. So let's talk about FAST for a few minutes. You know, obviously, that's where you and I met, was through training and through FAST. And let's talk about your journey. How did you end up getting linked up with the FAST group? And what are some of the experiences you've had with them that you feel kind of maybe helped mold and shape you in your professional development, even over the last couple of years?
Sure. So my department hosted a technical rescue conference in 2018, I believe it was. And a couple of the reps that were sort of first starting out with FAST, because that's sort of in the infancy, FAST has been around for about 10 years or so, and they were really starting to spread out in that time period. I was there working as their site liaison and with them, and through conversation, we discussed that, hey, nobody's really doing this in the Southeast. Would you be interested? And I didn't know a whole lot about what was going on, but I researched the product. I researched what they were up to and what they were doing. And I really saw that this was something that was beneficial for the fire service. And like it, they stated, there was nobody in our area that was involved. Fast forward about 6 months, I was in contact with Chief Mike Horst, Eric Allen, and the other members of the tribe that were in there in the beginning stages. And I was on a plane to Philadelphia doing an in-service training with those guys and had the opportunity to learn all it was about FAST and how it came about and the history of why Eric developed the FAST board and the different components. And while that was very intriguing and it solves a problem that the fire service definitely needs, what really kept me around was the tribe element that Eric tries to build, and that he's done a very good job of building. The people that work with FAST and the members that go around training and teaching others are top tier. There's nothing better than being around those guys and hanging out and having a good time just talking shop and just talking about life and doing those things.
Yeah, that's, anybody who's familiar with the FAST group knows you guys. I mean, some of the best dudes I know. We've had Eric on the show before. Chief Horst coming on next month. So definitely love talking to you guys. Love the product. But, like you said, the tribe aspect of it and the personal aspect of it, I think is what drives it home even more, right? When there's, when there's that kind of passion behind it and people that care. It's not just guys trying to peddle a product. It's guys legitimately trying to leave the fire service a little bit better than they found it and pass along knowledge and being invested in people. And so, yeah, man, I hats off to you guys for what you're doing. I think it's, the fact that you guys are so involved, not just with the product, but with training, right? Getting out there and training and, getting people to put reps in and to be better. That says a lot. So,
And to be completely honest, not to cut you off there, but
no,
we've sort of shifted our mission from being the product based company to being a culture based company, and we've developed programs that are completely set aside from the fast board itself that we're going out there. Our firefighter rescue program, our chief force has lectures. Eric has lectures. I'm teaching a lecture in Alabama, a first run of it on Friday. So there's a lot of different cultural aspects that we're talking about when it comes to firefighter rescue and those different things. Like you said, the board is what sort of spurred this whole movement, but the culture is what's more important. And Eric is very, very specific when he brings on new people as trainers. He doesn't want you to sell a product. He wants you to show value. And through the training and through the things that we're doing as a culture, that's what we want, is to show our value, show value or give value back to the fire service that it's given to us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, when you look at things through the lens of giving value, instead of just providing a thing, an object, a, you know, whatever, you know, that really is what separates, you know, when you look at great companies and companies that invest in making things better and pushing the industry forward. That's what it takes, right? It's not just looking at, like, you know, pinching pennies and, you know, looking at it from a cost aspect, much as it is from a value aspect. And man, that's, like I said, hats off to you guys for what you're doing, because I think that there's plenty of times where, you know, I know you guys are personally invested in helping people get better. And even though you may not be exactly making bank off of it, you know, it may not be one of those things where you're walking away with, oh, like, I just got a big bonus because we sold 15 boards or whatever. You know, there's plenty of trainings you're involved with it. It's not just sales. It's just getting out there, mixing it up with the guys, putting your gear on. And, you know, that's something that, to me, it matters. It matters that when you're investing people, right, all the other stuff will come along with that, right? When people see that you're invested in, there is value in what you're doing. You know, I hate to say it, like, it almost sells itself, because people realize, like, man, this thing really does impact, you know, the way we do RIT, the way we do down firefighter removal and things like that, you know. And it's not just firefighter removal. I mean, you could use it for a plethora of other things. But like, when you start seeing, you know, guys using it, I've seen, like, water rescue and things like that, and all these different components, again, showing value in it's not just a one trick pony, right? There's things that you can do in different scenarios. And so, like I said, I mean, the personal investment I've seen personally from you guys, being out different conferences and seeing the work that you guys put into it, I think, you know, speaks for itself. And like you said, you guys have an incredible team. I think it's pretty awesome that you're kind of, you know, I've known you the last, you know, few years, you know, with FAST, and always been more than willing to help out. You know, if you're at a conference, whatever's going on, training, to me, like I said, man, like, that's the kind of stuff that I think when people are looking, you know, at needs in the fire service, and they're looking at training, and they're looking at, you know, chiefs are doing the budget stuff, right? They're always balancing, well, how do we afford stuff like this? But at the end of the day, when you can get out there and invest in them and show them that you care, and show them how this is going to make them safer, make them better, help them carry out the mission better, like, that's an easier sell to the chief to go to say, hey, we need to get 3 of these or 10 of these or whatever. When there is that personal investment, and it's not just some guy like, hey man, buy my crap so I can get out of here. You know, sure. That man, like, you know, there's a lot of people out there pushing products. There's tons of, trust me, there's plenty of salesmen out there. But you guys, I don't feel like, you know, really, my experience has not been, you're not out there pushing things down people's throats and trying to, like, you need to buy this. Like, that's just not how you guys roll. And that's a testament, like you said, to the tribe, the culture, the mindset that you guys approach it with. So, you know, keep doing what you're doing, man. Cause like I said, you guys are making a difference. I think the trainings that you guys are doing, absolutely are positively impacting people in the fire service. And, you know, it sounds like, I mean, I talked to Eric a couple of weeks ago. It sounds like the company's doing well. I mean, it sounds like you guys are busier than a one-legged man in a butt-kicking contest.
It's crazy. We're sending guys all over. That's one of the tasks that I've taken on over the last year was, my title is director of training. And essentially what I do is I herd cats and send, you know, 20 guys across the country at all these different training opportunities that we've been invited to. And that's, that alone, just what people that are requesting us to come out and do those things is not because we have these big names or these people, if you will, but it's because they've heard about the culture that we're pushing and the fact that these guys work hard. And when we show up to a training site, it doesn't matter if it's our props that we're working on or if it's somebody else's props. We just want to work hard and help wherever we can so that, you know, the event as a whole is beneficial. So it's been really rewarding to do that. And because of trying to send guys here, there, and everywhere and schedule that, you know, my network has grown immensely, and I've learned so much. I can call, you know, guys from Texas, Seattle, wherever, and ask questions, and they give answers that, of things that they've experienced or things that help to, you know, make my small town of Covington better because I can learn from experiences that they've had as well. And that's all because of the tribe that Eric has put together.
Yeah, no doubt, man. That is, you know, such a big part of the service nowadays. You know, I tell people, get out of your bubble every, you know, at least a couple times here. Go to a regional training conference or seminar or something. You know, get out, mix it up, rub shoulders with other guys, because you can learn so much that you can bring back to your own department. There's so much out there if you're willing to put in the work and network and train and learn. You know, social media has made it a much smaller world, sure. You know, where we can reach out and, hey, you know, I saw this on your Facebook. I had some questions about it. And next thing you know, you're on a 2-hour conversation on the phone with a brother that you have never met, but you're picking their brain and you're learning or whatever. Or you go to a conference and you run into some guys that you find out like, oh man, like, how are you guys doing this? Or how are you doing that? And you start, you know, bouncing ideas off each other. And the next thing you know, you got something you can bring back that maybe is helpful to your organization. So that is definitely one of the things that I feel like the fire service has done well over the last decade, is we have done a better job of first of all, there's more training opportunities than ever before.
Sure.
I mean, every weekend you look around, there's something going on in this country. And in a lot of times within driving distance of where you're at. Number two, we've done a better job of disseminating information. Information flow is tremendously greater than it was when I first got on the job 18 years ago. And I'm sure you could testify to that. Like, I mean, just the amount of information that is out there now is truly amazing.
Yes.
But let me ask you this. So you work in a suburban department, you know, on the outskirts of Atlanta, Georgia, obviously suburban, suburban problems, if you will, from the standpoint of, I'm sure you guys run mutual aid.
We do.
So obviously running with mutual aid departments, you know, do you guys handle, like, if you get a structure fire, is your first alarm just your units, or you guys have people coming in right away?
We actually send people in to them on their first alarms, mm-hmm. and we have them coming to us on first alarms as well.
Sure.
And that's our county department, Newton County, that where I started volunteering. We send them a battalion and an engine, and then they send us the same on all first aid response or all first alarm responses.
So, yeah. And with that, I mean, there's challenges, right? When you got different sure. agencies working together, and certainly, you know, like us, I mean, we can barely cover a first alarm. You know, we dump the whole city for us to get a first alarm assignment, essentially. And you know, that what does that mean? Well, that means you got to figure out stuff. Like you said, you don't get to be like, oh, I only ride the engine, I only ride the truck, and this is all I do. And you know, the fact is, most of us have to kind of wear many hats and be able to kind of roll with the punches, so to speak, in the suburban setting. And like you said, you know, you're running metro problems with suburban staffing, essentially, which is a lot of us, right? That's a lot of the fire service finds themselves in that arena, especially as growth is happening in these suburban areas, you know, urban sprawl, if you will, or people moving to the suburbs. But what is the challenges that you know, that you have faced in your 24-year career there in that corner of the fire service? And what are some things that you feel like, you know, you've learned along the way as far as getting the job done with maybe less than ideal staffing, you know, and resources?
So as a captain, when the battalion chief's off, I have to often ride up in that position. And we had a fire a couple of weeks ago. My engine was out on another call. First unit that showed up on this fire was the rescue truck. all they have is a water can, 2.5 gallons. So that's not much of a booster tank. So they got in there and I started making assignments and I realized who I had. So I positioned them to be prepared for when the truck, which was my first due apparatus with a pump and tank, showed up, to be prepared and be ready to have everything in place. So those are the challenges. You can't, like you said, just go by, this is how we're going to run things. The engine's going to do this. The truck's going to do this. The rescue unit. It's not going to work that way when you have limited staffing, limited resources. So that being said, you have to be able to adapt and overcome those situations. And you learn to do that very quickly. If you don't, it's a sink or swim type endeavor. So you have to learn very quickly to think on your feet and to not get set in, we have to do it like this and this and this. I think that's probably one of the biggest things being a small department and the things that we face. In some areas of our town, the mutual aid department is going to get there first, and their tactics and the things they do are similar, but they are different because it's a different, you know, culture that they have, different tools, different equipment, things like that. So the training that we have to do with each other so that we have an idea of what they're going to do when they arrive on scene, and that if I ask for this, this is what I mean. We have to make sure that we're doing that and working together in that regard. So suburban fire service is certainly something that you have to be willing to be flexible and just change as the situation dictates.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, when you think about it, we don't have the luxury in suburbia and things like, I work for a city now, but we have suburban staffing and suburban, you know, so we have city problems with suburban resources. And, you know, I think people get caught up sometimes. Well, I work for a city, you know, fire. Okay. Well, unless you're working for a city that's got, you know, 500, 600, 700 guys on duty or, you know, on their payroll, you know, let's be honest, most of us, even in some of the bigger departments in the outskirts of, like, you know, you talk to guys from like Cobb County and stuff, like they got stations out in the more like suburban rural areas where they don't have units on top of each other, where it is more spread out. You know, my short stint in Hillsborough, I mean, we had city stations that were units on top of units of people on top of people. And then we had areas on the east end of the county that is rural where you're doing tanker shuttles and dump tanks and, you know, units are a little bit more spread out. And so, like, people get this mindset that, you know, well, I work for a big department. Well, what kind of department is it? Is it a county department where it's spread out over hundreds of square miles? So, yeah, you have 700 guys, but they're spread out over 1,500 square miles, you know, three different shifts. And you know, response times in some areas are longer, or maybe you're running three, maybe two. You know, I've seen that where you got these all these people, but it's just a couple guys on this rig, a couple guys on that rig. And so, like, people think that suburban problems only happen in small towns, you know, small towns, but that's just not the case, right? I mean, we see it in bigger metro departments in some cases. You know, LA County, as big as they are, they have areas that are very much, you know, the rural areas of the county, if you will, or more suburban areas of the county where they don't have a ton of resources, you know, like they would in like the city areas. You know, there's plenty of departments like that out there. And so people get pigeonholed in this, well, you know, I work in a big department, or I work for the city. Okay, I work for a city too, but we only have 6 houses and we can only do so much with what we have. And so, like, it's trying to get people to see that, you know, most of us don't have the luxury of saying, I'm an engine guy, that's all I do. I'm a truck guy, that's all I do. We have to be flexible. We have to be kind of that jack of all trades mindset of, we have to be able to shift gears, because, you know, you may show up on the engine and have to do truck work because of the order of arrival, or mutual aid shows up and they have a different, you know, and like you said, you mentioned the training aspect. Man, I feel like you have to train even more in a smaller department because you do have to wear so many hats, and because you do have to, you know, work with mutual aid departments. It's critical. We have to train together. We have to be on the same page. And I would argue that, you know, you probably have to should train more than our urban counterparts. You know, you talk to guys from FDNY, like, they've rolled, you know, the same engine house for the last 15 years on the same piece. Like, there's some continuity there. They get really good at specific skill sets because that's what their riding assignment is, right? But when you have to kind of do it all, you know, you really do have to be constantly, reviewing stuff, training, going over stuff. One of the things that, you know, I think I wanted to hit on was the kind of the mindset as a captain in the suburban department, right? Having to look at your people's strengths and weaknesses and figure out, you know, how to best accomplish the mission and not getting pigeonholed in, like, we always do this way. Man, that mindset is huge, right? To be effective as a leader in an organization where you don't have, you know, 25 stations in 20 square miles and your guys piling in, you don't have 100 guys on the fire. It's important that we still accomplish the mission with the personnel that we do have. And so, like, you as a boss, you have to maximize the personnel on scene, right? You have to maximize their effectiveness and make sure that people are going to be successful as possible in those roles. So what are some things, you know, we talk about, you know, big departments, you can kind of hide in numbers. You know, you talk to guys from, like, yeah, if you know why Chicago police, they got shit bags. They got guys that they hide in the numbers, right? You can't hide in the numbers when there's only like 9 of you on scene.
Exactly right. So it's funny you say that. We had the opportunity to go to The Rock and do a demo of the fast board a month or so ago. And a couple of the guys were there that work for FDNY that are now part of our tribe. They said that guy's been at the fire academy since I went through recruit school, and he's not training people. He's there doing odd and end tasks. And so to say that there's tens and twos everywhere. So even FDNY, even the larger departments, that's certainly the case. But as far as trying to spread the wealth out, you know, it starts in the morning when you're doing staffing and those things, and thinking about the players that you have for the day and how you're going to set up, you know, if you will, a stronger firefighter with somebody who's up and coming, with somebody who needs some assistance, and trying to make sure those pieces are together, so that they can all be beneficial to each other. They can teach someone, they can learn from someone who is more successful as a firefighter, if you will. But when you get on scene, it becomes difficult, as you don't want to lean on somebody too heavily. Hey, I really need you to do this. Okay, I know you got that done. Now go do this. That does a couple of things. It's going to wear them out. It's going to burn them out if you're constantly relying on that one individual. But even worse, it's going to pigeonhole somebody else and say, well, I can sit over here because he's not going to call on me and ask me to do anything. They're not going to become a better firefighter. They're not going to be more, you know, successful in the tasks that are assigned. So perhaps taking the opportunities in those moments to pair them with somebody who is a good firefighter and tactically proficient, putting them together and saying, hey, let him do this skill. You be there to watch him, teach him in this moment. Obviously, if there's imminent rescue or life and death situation going on, you have to put the pieces where they fall, where they fall. You're going to rely on those people that you know can get the job done. But if there's an opportunity to learn, then we need to make sure that we're taking advantage of that so that everyone can eventually become the firefighter that you want to call upon, that you want to lean on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that old adage that you're only as strong as the weakest link, right? Yeah. The chain's only as strong as the weakest link. It's easy to overutilize your strong players, right? The guys that are just, you know, solid, and like I said, the bad thing is you burn those guys out, you know, and it's just something, it's funny. And you talk about, like, you know, leadership stuff. I've seen this over and over in my career where you find somebody who's, like, really plugged in, who gets it, who's, you know, all in. And man, sometimes, you know, I've had chiefs that'll ride you to death. They will ride you to death with every committee, every task. And it's almost like, you know, and then, like, they get burned out because they're like, man, I feel like I'm getting punished for doing a good job. You know, they don't want to do a good job anymore because it's like, man, I don't want to keep, you know, getting beat down here. And then the other thing is, like, you hit on, and I think it's probably the bigger issue, even more so, is you're not investing in those members that need that work. They need those reps. They need that opportunity to grow, to learn. And in a suburban department, like I said, where you don't have tons and tons and tons of people showing up, you know, you got a pretty small, close-knit family, right? It's a group of people that, you know, have to work together. And, you know, to me, it's like, you hit on it, using your strengths, right? Using people that are strong in certain things to mentor, teach, and improve those members that need to kind of close that gap a little bit. And what an opportunity. You know, you don't always have to be the guy as the captain, right? You don't always have to be the person doing like all the mentoring, all the teaching, right? If you can get your other players involved and collectively are making each other better, first of all, there's personal buy-in, right? There's personal buy-in for guys that are like, hey, man, the captain trusts me to get this done. I'm gonna give it my all. And the other thing is too, you know, when it's peer-to-peer, sometimes that for whatever reason, certain people respond better when it's, hey man, like come over here, let's go over this. Instead of like if it's the captain telling me like they're nervous, like the captain's watching or whatever. Peer-to-peer sometimes is you know effective for helping people grow and learn. And man, talk about building a team environment when the whole team is invested in the mission and in helping each other succeed. Man, that's to me, that's winning culture, right? When everybody's invested in the outcome,
yes.
That's when you have the best environment to work in, right? When people feel like they can learn, it's okay to stumble. Like guys are going to help build me up and fix this situation. You know, to me, one of the worst things you could do in a culture is create an environment where people are afraid to fail, where people are afraid to take ownership, where people feel like, hey, I'm just going to look out for myself because that's all that matters. Like if people have that mindset where they're, you know, not focused on the mission, they're not focused on their counterparts. To me, you're setting yourself up for a failed culture. You're setting yourself up for, you know, failing on the fire ground because, you know, there's not that trust there. There's not that respect there. There's not that camaraderie like you talked about 20 minutes ago. That is a huge part of being successful, right? People have to know that you care.
Exactly. Like you said, as an 18-year-old kid, my first experience in the fire service was people encouraging me to be successful at a task that I've never completed before. And going back to the firefighter that struggles, he can force 100 doors in a station with a door prop, and he won't remember that at all. But the first time he's successful forcing a door on a job, man, he's going to remember that for the rest of his career. And so that's where taking those opportunities, even in that situation, is important, and allowing the guys to see him be successful as well, so that you know they can all share in that experience.
And that's that, man. That's a perfect way to put it. You know, sharing in that experience. When the team's rallying around each other, right? When guys are, you know, we certainly share our fair share of heartaches and sorrows and frustrations and all the negative stuff. But it's important not just to focus on that negative stuff, right? It's important to focus on the positive stuff. And as an officer, you can attest to this. Praising your people when praise is due is huge. You know, it's a big shot in the arm for your firemen. It's a huge shot in the arm for the team when they do something good to recognize that and to be like, hey, you did a good job. And sometimes, you know, man, that little pat on the back, like, hey, good job. You know, well-placed attaboys can go a long way in keeping people motivated, keeping people hungry for the job, keeping people hungry to better the organization and the team. When people work and feel like, you know, all the focus is on the negative stuff, it's never on the positive stuff. Again, it goes back to what kind of team are we trying to build? And in suburbia, like I said, when you don't have hundreds of guys to throw at a fire, like it's so much more important that team is even more cohesive. That team, you know, like I said, you can't hide in the numbers. You can't hide in the crowd. You have to be able to show up and give it your all when that bell rings.
Sure, certainly.
So shifting gears, and this kind of segues really perfectly into this. One of the things that, you know, we wanted to discuss today is balance. And I think this actually ties directly to the firehouse culture. I think balance, when we talk about balance, when the first thing that pops in my head is, you know, people talk about work-life balance. But what does balance mean to you as a man, as a captain at the fire department, and you know, in your walk in life, what does that word mean to Jeremy Mathis?
So with everything that we have going on as fire service professionals, as people that go out on the training circuit and teach, and as a family man, as you know, a father, as a husband, trying to make sure that there's enough of myself for all of my responsibilities. And it's difficult sometimes. It really is. And I've had some tough conversations with my wife because I've planned all these different tasks. And I've realized that, you know, sometimes it's okay for somebody else to go and do it. So that's the most important thing, is making sure that I'm the person that I'm supposed to be for all the people that are important in my life.
Yeah, it's I think that saying, you know, it's hard to pour from an empty cup.
Yeah, yeah.
Really kind of hits home with me. And man, it's so easy to get out of balance. It's so easy when you love the job, you love the fire department, you know, you got the fire department stuff going on as captain and all the things going on there. You got the fast stuff and the training and you know, you're passionate about it. But how easy is it to get too many irons in the fire? How easy is it to be spread a little too thin to where you're not being effective anymore? You know, do you feel like there's a tipping point where guys, you know, get lopsided one way or the other and maybe miss the mark a little bit and end up actually being ineffective on all fronts because of how thin they're spread?
Sure. So first, let me back up just a little bit and talk about my family just for a minute. My wife, Christy, and I, we've been married for 7 years. We blended our family together. We have five daughters that are busy as they can be. Two of them are in college now. One's a sophomore in college. One's a freshman in college.
I just got to ask real quick. I hate to interrupt. How do you have any hair left?
It's going away very quickly. I had a full head of hair 8 years ago, but 7 years now, it's starting to disappear. But it's certainly very challenging. 15-year-old twins, they're in the ninth grade, and then 13-year-old, she's in the eighth grade. And all of the things that go on with them, two of them away at school, and hoping that in the time that I've had with them, you know, I was able to instill a little bit of values and a little bit of just common sense so that they don't make the dumb decisions that often college kids do. And still pouring into the younger girls that are in high school and in middle school to make sure that they're doing the same thing and making smart decisions, which are all heavily involved in extracurricular activities. So their time, too, is quite minimal. So they're having to learn balance the same as we all are. But to speak to what you asked as far as spreading yourself too thin and not being able to do things effectively. So Sean told me my hair looks great. Don't worry about it. So that's awesome. Thank you, Sean. To be able to do those things, you have to just make sure that you're spending the time with the people that you're with at the moment. Be present when you're there. So when I'm at work, I have to be present, not worry about what's going on with FAST. But my family is always going to be there. It's always going to be, you know, an important part of what my focus is on. But when I'm at work at the fire department, I don't need to worry about FAST. When I'm with FAST, you know, and make sure that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing there and scheduling the things and the people effectively. But most importantly, when I'm at home, I need to be at home and not worry about the other factors that may be going on in the rest of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Be here now, right?
Exactly.
Be present where you're at. You know, I think that's something I know I have struggled with over the years is, you know, being lopsided. You know, when I'm home, sometimes, you know, your mind's still going a million miles an hour on training stuff or this conference or this class or, you know, whatever it is, podcast, things going on. Like, there's always things competing for your time. And, you know, sometimes I just got to remind myself, like, hey, I'm home. My kids are home. My wife's home. Like, right now, my wife's at work. My kids are in school. Like, this is my time to get stuff done, right? But balancing that and like, you know, making it a point when my kids are home. Because, you know, let's be honest. They get home from school. They got basketball practice. They got this. They got that. You know, by the time we have dinner, that I might have an hour or two with them in the evenings. And you guys have kids. I mean, Sean, you can attest to this. Sometimes, you know, you got to purposely take time out, carve it out and say, hey, this is family time. This is time for me to be present now with my kids or with my wife. And I'll be honest, man, like, I think that that's something that it's easier because guys tell you, you know, you got to do more and more and more. You got to, you know, give everything you got to the fire service. And I understand the sentiment, but I think that's bad advice. I think that you have to be able to have stuff in your cuff left to give to your family and to the things that, you know, you have to have hobbies. You have to have ways to de-stress away from the job. And let's be honest, the minute you retire, they're already looking for someone to promote and fill your position. You get hurt on the job. Hey, here's a disability check. Have a nice life. Like, they're going to fill that position. And it's so easy to get caught up in like the hustle and bustle sometimes. And not that it's not important. Like, what we do is important. Don't take anything away from that. Like, what, you know, training others, helping others to be better, investing in the fire service is important. But who's going to be with you when you're retired? Who's going to be with you when the ride's over? And you know, we said this before on the show, you know, nobody's going to look back in 30 years and say, man, I wish I would have worked more, you know, like, let's be honest. You know, there's gotta be balance. Like you said, there's gotta be that understanding of like, hey, you know, this is important, but my, you know, for me getting my priorities right. And maybe, you know, you can speak to this, Jeremy, and Sean, but for me, my priorities were out of whack for a while. And I'll be honest, I'm just straight up. Like I was that guy that was all in on the job and this and that. And, you know, I neglected my family. Like I wasn't emotionally available for my kids is like I should be. I wasn't as plugged in. And so taking a step back and spending time, you know, my faith, my family, and then the fire service in that order. Like it is really for me, like that's how I have to look at it. Because if I get out of whack and it's all fire service, right, and I'm neglecting those other areas of my life, guess what? Eventually that stuff's going to cause problems at home, which is going to bleed into the fire service, which ironically is going to take away from the thing that I'm pouring all my time into. Right. So, you know, it is hard sometimes to pump the brakes and say, hey, you know what, like you said earlier, Jeremy, it's okay if somebody else does this. I don't have to be involved with every, I don't have to have my finger on every single thing that's going on with the company, with the department, whatever. I don't have to be on every committee. I don't have to be on, you know, the guy for everything. It's okay to focus on being the guy for your family, you know, being there for your kids, and you know, being present for those growing pains of life and being there to support them and to show them that you love them. And I'll be one last thing and I'll turn it over to you guys, but the date night thing with my wife, like, it's amazing. You get so busy with life that you forget sometimes like you're married, but you're like shift fast. And then it's like business partners, right? We're just like high fiving in the hallway. Like, hey, you got this, you got it. And then you just like realize like, holy shit, it's been 6 months and we haven't even hardly had like a deep conversation beyond, you know, hey, did you clean the cat litter? Did the kids get their lunches for school or whatever? Like all the day-to-day stuff. And that's huge. It's huge. It's amazing what a little bit of investment in those relationships will do.
Sure. It's difficult to say no at times, no matter where you are. And as I said, my wife and I have been married 7 years. I've obviously got kids from a previous marriage, and that's what happened. And to be just completely open book, I got too involved in work. I was working, you know, multiple fire service jobs, 48 hours on, 24 hours off. And I wasn't present when I was at home. I was tired. I was sleeping, and that relationship soured. And, you know, it wasn't fully my fault. It wasn't fully her fault, but I learned a lot from that experience. And I said, you know, this time it's not going to be the same way. I'm going to invest in my family. And, you know, our kids have blended together very well. They get along and there's great camaraderie between them. The three younger girls are just thick as thieves. They're best friends. And then the older girls, they call each other and going through the college experience together. Even though they're at separate schools, they call and talk to one another and ask questions about what's going on at each campus. They're a couple hours apart, so they even meet up on occasional weekends and go to different sporting events with each other at the opposite school. So it's been a really awesome experience going through the relationship that I am now. I wouldn't take anything away from what happened in my first relationship because it got me to where I am now, and it has three beautiful daughters from that. So I can't, you know, say that I would change anything, because obviously I wish I was more present and I didn't go through that experience of a divorce, but it wouldn't, if I didn't, I wouldn't be where I am today.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing to add. You know, it's easy to get sidetracked with everything, you know, cause it is a little bit intoxicating, you know, when everybody is kind of lobbying for your attention and they want something from you, like you feel important. One thing I've learned from this whole thing too, is things are going to be on my terms. You know, that's it. You know, my children are not in public school. They're homeschooled. So I'm with them all the time, or they're with their mom all the time. So with that, even when I'm home, there's a thing where it's like, that's not really, I'm educating them, right? Like, we're not hanging out and doing stuff like that. So even doing stuff like this, like, as much as I love to do it, I want to donate time to it, and or going out and teaching or whatever it may be. Like, I've had to really over the years realize, like, man, for years I said yes to everybody else and I wasn't saying yes to my family, right? And you start thinking, you're like, man, I'm taking shift trades for this. You know, I'll use some vacation time, whatever it is that you have to do to get those other obligations you said yes to, and your family suffers, right? Because those are vacation days that I'm not using to do something with my wife and kids. So there is a bit of it to where it's like Nick was alluding to, man, the fire service is great, and like, we can all give so much to it, and it can give so much to us. But at the end of the day, it's a moving ship, you know, and, you know, we all want to leave our piece of it. But, you know, the one thing that's not going to always be there is our friends and family and those who support us. Because at the end of the day, you know, when you realize that there's always somebody else, right? If you say no, there's always somebody else that'll say yes. Right. So you don't have to be that person, you know, and you really do, like, and I can't speak for either one of you, but I know for me, like, at least for probably a good 2 years, I kind of lost who I was, because I wasn't Sean Duffy anymore. Right. Like, I was like Sean, the entertainer, so to speak. Right. Like, I was off doing all these other things for everybody else. And it just became so, like, emotionally overwhelming. Like, you actually started to resent doing it in the first place. It no longer became fun. So I would say, with balance, you know, make things on your own time. You know, nothing wrong with having ambitions and wanting to go forward and doing things, but make sure that you have the time to dedicate to it, and it's not taking away from other aspects that really, truly need your time. Because in the end of it, you know, the job's the job, and it's a great one, but it's still a job. You know, and the only people that are going to remember that you weren't there is your wife, your kids, and all the other people that care about you. So, yeah, that's just really what I've learned over the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. Because I'm like you, Jeremy, I want to say yes to everything. And I have, you know, and then I realize, like, oh, crap, there's just not enough. You know,
right.
Like, you got FAST, you got podcasts, you got your own classes, you got FDIC, you got Firehouse Expo, whatever it is that's going on. And when you're involved with all that, like, they all have their own set of requirements for you, you know, and eventually you got to have to be like, I got to separate this stuff out, because I can't be 100% at anything, because I'm so drained trying to just play catch up. And now it becomes like a checklist, right? Oh shit. It's one more thing I got to do. And that's not fair to anybody else either, because you're not even invested in that stuff at that point, you know. So just make sure that you don't get burnt out, because it's a very real thing, and when it happens, it changes you in its entirety. It's going to change all of your relationships, and if you're fortunate, maybe you can fix it, but not everybody is that fortunate. So just, you know, keep your pulse on it and make sure it doesn't get to that point.
That's right. Very true.
So you know, I actually just finished Josh Chase's book, Engage the Enemy, last night. Anybody, you know, if you're struggling with balance, you're struggling with the family, you know, dynamic, you know, engage the enemy, fight for your purpose, Josh Chase. Man, I'll be honest, man, like, it, honest to God, was a gut check, a little bit of a shot across the bow, you know, to fight for your family, being willing to fight for, you know, what you care about. You know, sometimes we fight for all this stuff that, in the end of the, like I said, we're still going to hang our boots up and go to the house and it's like, man, like if we put the same effort, and I'm talking to the fire service as a whole, there's a lot of guys that this job will suck you in, man. It is awesome. It is, you know, like you said, there's so many great things about it, but the downside to that is, you know, we've accepted this mindset that, you know, broken relationships and, you know, drinking ourselves to death or whatever, like all these cultural things that come with it, right? There's this expectation that, oh, you know, I got told when I came on the job, kid, you're going to be, you'll be divorced in 10 years. Like literally, I got told that, like one of my first officers was like, this like automatically programmed to me like, hey, this is the way it is in the fire service. Everybody gets a divorce, man. Like just accept it, you know, or hey, like you're going to miss your kids, you know, birthdays and games and this and that, and which to some extent is true. But I'll be honest with you, like some of those wounds were self-inflicted, right? Because I had all these other obligations that took me away from being present for my kids' basketball game or, you know, whatever, their recitals or concerts. And I get it. You're going to miss some. Like that's the nature of shift work. But I think like over the last couple of years, taking a concerted effort to be present for more of those things. And like Sean said, you know, taking those vacation days and using them not for more job stuff, but for family stuff, that time to unplug is huge. And the whole you know, mindset, I think in the fire service, you know, we talk about the fire service as a big family. We need to get back to the fire service being a family in the sense of like our families are connected, right? The fire service is connected. We look out for each other, we take care of each other in that regard. And remember our, you know, first family first.
Yep. So I have a core group of guys. I try to be careful and not play favorites, but I have a core group of guys that I work with. And we do things together. Our wives hang out and, you know, we constantly have different things going on at each other's houses, depending on what weekend it is. So that's really huge as far as including the families in that aspect. It helps to build that camaraderie there at the station. And also, the families being able to have someone else to rely upon. My wife has sort of taken the mother hen role for the younger wives as well, and going through the different stages of motherhood and bringing in children to the different things that are going on. So it's been really fun to watch her take on that part of being a captain's wife, if you will. So it's very rewarding having those relationships and having those close connections with the people that you work with.
I think that's important. You know, when you talk about being kind of in tune with what's going on with your people, right? Knowing when they're having a bad day, being able to pick up on the subtle things that are different. Like, hey man, you all right? You struggling? Like, you know, that's where, to me, a lot of folks in leadership positions miss the boat is they're not, you know, it's only work related, right? It's only like, you know, at work, this is what we, you know, this is our relationship. You're the firefighter and the captain. And I think like, you know, when I first came on the job, had a lot of guys that coming over for barbecues or, hey, we're going to the park. Hey, we're going to go out and play softball or whatever. Those things, for whatever reason, over the last couple decades, I feel like have kind of in some places of the fire service have fallen off, and it's good to see people bringing emphasis back to it. Like, hey, we got to get back to, you know, putting the phones down and just talking, sitting on the bumper, talking, having relationships. And then, you know, like you said, having time to kind of be available for your family, and getting your family involved. Honestly, I mean, that's a huge part too, is like when your family's involved with what you do, in the fire department, man, like that's huge. Because it's not just like I go to work and leave my family in the dark. Like they're you know, talking to other people's wives and kids and things like that. They're building relationships. And that's one of the things I think that makes the fire service unique, is we do have that opportunity, more so than maybe other jobs, to build that trust, that respect, that personal relationship. And I get it. At the end of the day, you're the captain. You got to make decisions. But when people know that you care about them, right, they're going to go the extra mile for you.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a great thing to bring up. And I was going to actually ask you this question in the rapid fire, Jeremy, but since the conversation went this way, I'll ask you now. Something that I've observed over several years now is is newer members, whether that's not necessarily meaning like a new person to the organization, just a new person to that firehouse or to that shift or that crew or whatever the situation is, right? Not really feeling included. Maybe they feel like out of touch with everybody else, I guess would be a good word, right? Everybody knows who they are. They've been around a little bit, but that whole setting is new to them, right? So as an officer, you know, and hopefully other officers that are listening, you know, if they've seen the same thing, if you've seen something like that, how do you go about making that person feel part of the group, right? Like, feel like, hey, like you have a place here. Your opinions are valued. You know, like, I want you to feel at home here. I don't want you to come into work and feel on edge, even though you might've been here for some time or whatever, like open up, be part of the family, the camaraderie, like all that stuff. Like what advice would you have for that situation?
So I've realized over the last couple of years, I'm quickly becoming the old guy around the station. And that's a tough transition. Yeah. The hair part. That's a very tough transition to make. But with that being said, the newer and younger firefighters coming in, or even those that aren't maybe cut from the same cloth, if you will, as far as the way we grew up down south, somebody that's from Wisconsin that moves to Georgia or whatever the case may be, you have to connect with those guys and relate to them on their level. Find things that interest them. And quite often through conversation, you'll find something that correlates. It's funny having the you know, 19 and 20 year old daughters that are in college, and we have a 20 year old kid that we just hired, and I can hear the conversations that the girls have, and I hear him saying the same things, and I go over and I just throw out a couple of the new slang or the new jargon that kids use, and he just sort of looks at me like, what the heck did you just say? And so that's funny to be able to relate on that level. He's like, how the hell did you know what that meant? And so then having conversation and bringing, you know, my family experience and different things back into it and just being able to connect with them on a personal level is what you have to do. You can't make it all about business, which is what we've been saying for the last several minutes, making that connection and finding things that interest them. And like I said, it's going to correlate. There's going to be something there that's going on. So. That you can relate to with those individuals.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that too, because like there's so many personalities in the fire service, right? And especially like you talk about a firehouse, like I don't know how many people you have in your firehouse, but for me on my shift, there's four, right? So that's four different people, all four different ages, four different personalities, different hobbies, whatever, right? So that's a lot to kind of try and intermingle, right? And obviously if you have more in the firehouse, or maybe you have multi-company, you know, a station, then that just complicates things even more. So I find it interesting, like the inability to talk, right? Sometimes is, you know, well, that person doesn't talk. Well, maybe that person doesn't talk because they don't know what to say. They don't feel like they have anything to offer, because they're what they like to talk about or what they like to do is so vastly different than the majority, right? So I found like small talk, man. Hey, you know, how's the wife? How's the kids? How's the family? What'd you guys do this weekend? You know, you just start asking those questions, and it doesn't have to be a lengthy conversation, but at least try and get people open up, right? You know, because once people feel comfortable enough and they start opening up, you'll truly get to know that person. But what I've seen, which I think is unfortunate a lot of times, is that quiet person who sits there, who's just trying to figure everything out, take it all in, listen, you know, and figure out like, where do I fit in this situation? Oftentimes they get disregarded as, you know, well, what's wrong with them? Like, oh, well, they never talk, or, and that never happens. Like nobody ever sits down and says, hey man, is everything good? Like you're pretty quiet. Like, just take that time, man. You're going to be with that person for the next 20, 30 years, whatever, however long it is. Maybe you're at the end of your career. You might only be with that person for 5 or 6 years, but that's still time. And you're still with that individual or individuals for more time than you're with your family, you know? So I think it's something that we really need to be a lot more cautious about in our fire service. It kills me. And I don't know where that mentality came from. I don't know if it starts on probation where it's like, hey, just sit there, shut up, talk when you're talked to type thing. I really don't know, but in an environment where we all rely on each other so much, right? And we have to be able to lean on it, not just for skills, right? Now, I'm not talking about just fire calls or EMS calls. I'm talking about like life in general. You know, when something bad's happening in your life, you go to the firehouse, you should be able to count on those individuals to talk through it, right? Like talk to them, let them know. So there's a lot that we owe each other. And I think we're doing each other a disservice by not figuring out like how do we bring everyone together.
Certainly. I remember my first captain was an old salty guy who he wouldn't say anything to you unless he had something to fuss at you about. And I try to be the opposite of that and carry on conversations. I ask them how their day is. When I walk across the bay and I see them involved in whatever they're doing, I stop in and I talk to them about what's going on. We have guys that play music for their church or play in a band and do those things. And it may not necessarily be the band, may not necessarily be music that I particularly care for, but I'll sit in there and I'll listen and just spend that time with them to share in something that they like to do. And I think that's vitally important. That old salty guy, I remember him and I can still see his face to this day, but there were very few people that showed up to his retirement party because of the way that he was. And I don't want to be that person. I want people to, when I leave my legacy on my department or on the fire service as a whole, to say that this guy really cared about people. And that's bringing them in and having those earnest conversations is very important to help foster that legacy.
Yeah. You know, we kind of talked about balance in regards to like the work-life balance, and certainly that is critical. I kind of want to get your thoughts on balance in the firehouse. And I think this is an important topic because I think, especially nowadays, there's this mindset that it's, you got to be go time 24/7 at the firehouse. Like you got to be all in all the time. Like, you know, every day needs to be, you know, just 100% max intensity, whether it's workout, whether it's training. And the older I get, the more I realize, like, especially as an officer, you can push and push and push people, but eventually, like, people got to have their downtime too. People got to have family time too. There's got to be a balance between training and the job, and then the family aspect of it, and the, you know, even just downtime where they can call their spouse or talk to their kids, or just, you know, you can't have the whole day from 7 a.m. till bedtime playing and just like, we're going to do this and that. And I'm speaking from experience. That's something I know for a fact that, you know, when you try to push too hard, sometimes you actually do the opposite of what you're trying to do. You know, you want to get the best out of people, but there is a point where you got to balance that out with family and family time and downtime. And I see guys all the time, you know, and don't get me wrong, like kudos to them. You know, they're out there, it's Christmas morning, they're doing a 3-hour, you know, writ drill, this, that, and the other. More power to you. I think it's okay to have down days at the firehouse. I think it's okay to have time where you're like, hey, we're just going to do family stuff today. Like guys have been charging hard for the last 3 weeks, drilling, doing all this stuff. Like, you know what? We're taking a day down. We're taking a day. We're going to, you know, do our rig checks, do our stuff like we're supposed to. But let's just, you know, it's a Sunday morning. Let's cook breakfast. Let's sit around and you know, just talk. Just be family. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm alone here. But I want to get your thoughts on that, Jeremy, because I think that sometimes, like, just like we always push to do more for the fire service, we get this mindset, hard charging, man, we're, you know, 3%ers, we're rocking, you know, rocking out, doing this thing, like kicking ass. And sometimes the point I'm trying to make is, like, sometimes people just need you to be personable. Sometimes people just need you to, like, hey, man, like, it's been a long couple of weeks. Like, let's enjoy this Sunday. Let's just spend time as a family talking. We'll sit around and have a cup of coffee, because I think we're missing the boat in some regards when we're just trying to expect people to be at max output 24/7. I don't think that's realistic. I don't think that's, you know, it's something that you can demand of people. And like I said, I've had personal experience with that where on both sides, where, you know, Sometimes your people just need to let their hair down and take a break. Sometimes your people just need, you know, Jeremy, the mentor, Jeremy, the person who cares about my family, not Jeremy, the captain who's telling me clean this, do this drill, let's go. You know, like sometimes, you know, you got to balance that out at the firehouse too. It's not just at home. It's also in the firehouse itself. And I think like, you know, look at it, 25, 30 year career. You know, yeah, we should be trying to get better, incrementally better all the time. But sometimes, you know, just like people that are bodybuilders and that are, you know, competitive athletes, you know what they have? They have down days. They have rest days too, recovery days, because you can't lift 24/7 without breaking stuff down. Like there is a tipping point where it's too much. I just want to get your thoughts on that, man. I want to know, you know, is that something you've experienced, or is that, you know, what are your thoughts on the balance in the firehouse between the job and the personal side of it?
Sure. We've all had that time period where the fire service or the fire department that you work for says you have to be busy from this time to this time. And I think it's especially as we're becoming busier, like I said, Metro Atlanta Department, Metro Problems, Suburban Staffing, as we're becoming busier and busier, the need for downtime is going to be more important. Last shift, I'm glad we didn't do this yesterday, to be quite honest with you, because we were up 8 times after midnight. It's like, why do we even go to sleep at this point? So with that being said, you have to have that downtime. There's going to be tasks and certain things that you do throughout the day. But once you've completed your task, your training's good. You know, the things that we've set forth that we're going to do for the month, we have to make sure that we are taking time to rest, because you might be up all night long. And there are days that we take the day off and we check our rigs and we make sure that all the equipment's, you know, ready to go. And then after that, it's like, y'all go chill out, go cook breakfast, go do whatever it is that you need to do on your own, self-study, whatever the case may be. So those things are certainly important to have that downtime. The being busy from 8 to 5 or until those days should be long gone from the fire service, in my opinion. And any officer that still champions that as his motto, well, my guys stay busy. Well, your guys don't like you very much. They may be respectful to you to your face, but they're talking shit about you behind your back.
Yeah, that's the truth. You know, I'll put my own personal experiences in there, and I won't mention names or timeframes or any of that stuff. But listen, man, I'm a people person. I'll sit there and I'll talk your ear off if we're compatible and we can have a good conversation. You know, if not, then I'm probably not going to be around you, and I'm going to find other things to do. That's not because I like to stay busy. That's because I don't want to be around you. You know what I mean? Because either A, you're negative, or B, like you're just, you don't talk at all. Like it's just better for me to go off, or C, we're just on two separate ends of the spectrum, right? And it's probably better that unless we're on an emergency run or we're having a meal or whatever, like we just do our separate things. What I've found with that is, you know, everybody always talks shit about the person that's off doing things. Oh, that person doesn't want to hang out with us, or they're always busy. Or when in reality, it's the opposite. Like, no, they probably do, right? But you're most likely the problem of why that individual is not around. You know, so some self-reflection, you know, goes a long way. And I think as anybody, leaders in general in the fire service, whether you have rank or you don't, when you see individuals that are like that, that should be a flag to go up. Maybe nothing's wrong at all, and they just have stuff to do, and that's okay. But when it's consistent time after time after time, maybe you need to sit there and look at it and be like, hey, is there more to this? Like, should we dig deeper? Like, is this person happy? Is something going on at home? Is there an issue with the crew? Like, whatever it is, you know, I've met very few firefighters that actually like to talk about their issues. They usually wait until something happens and then it just blows up. And instead of just like talking about it in the moment, you know, when it's starting to fester. So I think we owe that to each other, you know, whether we be at the low level firefighter or up at a ranking level position, just, you know, we should all feel like we can talk and do things without having to avoid each other.
It's quite often. My bunk room is my office at the same. Everyone else has a common bunk, and captain, lieutenant have their office and bunk together. It's very common to have six guys hanging out in my office, and we're just cutting up and you know, talking about the things that we need done for the day. And sometimes after the 5 o'clock hour, when everybody is really chill, the admin's gone from the building. Sean, I'm at a headquarters station, so we often get tasks that come down from those guys as well. They're still hanging out and having a good time until we all go and cook dinner and do those things together. So it's very rewarding to see that they trust me enough to hang out in there and know that, you know, I've got their back and they've got mine. And so I've got a really good crew that we're able to have those conversations. Occasionally we do have the outcast, if you will, that separates himself. And typically through some conversations with me and that individual, we figure out what the why they distance themselves or whatever it is. And sometimes it's just, like you said, they have things going on and they're sort of self-sorting the whatever's going on in their head, and they don't want to be around the group. But more often than not, most everybody is there hanging out and having good conversations.
Yeah, I think it's the beauty of the firehouse, right? I mean, like, everybody always talks about the kitchen table or whatever, like those staples of firehouse living. And you know, when that doesn't become a staple, there's definitely something needs to be addressed. And like you said, that about that person that's quiet, right? That leader that's quiet, like, they might respect you, but behind your back they're talking shit about you. Like, I would ask everybody, like, do you want to be that person? Like, people are going to talk shit regardless, right? I mean, that's just nature. You know, maybe it's friendly, maybe it's not, but in the grand scheme of things, like, when your name is mentioned, right, I would hope that people aren't like, oh, that person's a fucking asshole. You know what I mean? They're not going to say that to your face. You know, maybe they will, but generally they won't, and they're just going to go about their day. You know, so there's nothing more powerful than coming in, looking forward to going to work because you know you're going to hang out with a bunch of dudes and cut up for the day. And I had a chief that open door policy, and he meant it. Like, legit, everybody was in there drinking coffee, hanging out, like, just laughing, getting the day to day. And then we'd go and we'd sit at the kitchen table and lay everything out for the day and say, hey, like, this is what we're going to do. All right, everybody cool? All right, after breakfast, let's get on it. And, you know, we had a great time. You go to other firehouses, it's like, hey, what are we doing today? I don't know. And it's silent. Mm-hmm. That's a place you don't want to be. Right. Yeah. And you're looking at your watch or the clock, and you're like, God, man, it's like, I just can't wait to get the hell out of here. Like, this sucks. It's not fun. I feel like I'm just punching a time clock, you know. And those are things that, like, I think that we need to kind of do a better job at eliminating if possible. I mean, we probably never will, but at least, you know, getting pretty damn close to just that being an anomaly, you know.
Some of the shortest days and some of the longest days of my life have been at a fire station. And the short days, because you're having such a good time and cutting up with the guys and you're running calls and doing your thing. And then some of the longest days is when you're with that crew that you're working over, or a swap or whatever, and you're working with that crew that doesn't mesh well. And that's the long 24 hours.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, the job is important. Our commitment and our preparation for the job is important. But when we're talking about building culture, when we're talking about, you know, having a successful crew environment, like Sean was talking about, you know, you got to balance it out, right? The people, you know, work hard, play hard kind of thing. If it's always, you know, like that old Kajdi, you know, officer you're talking about, that the only time he talked to you was, is all business, and it's usually pointing out something you're not doing to his satisfaction, you're going to lose people, right? You know, they may do what you say because you're the captain. But again, you know, people got to know that there's some, you know, the commitment obviously to the mission is there. You know, we're going to train, we're going to, you know, work out, we're going to do these things. That's great. But when it's time to relax, when it's time to let your hair down, when it's time to, you know, they should not feel like, it shouldn't be, you know, I feel like Step Brothers. Will Ferrell's like, this house is a prison for the land of bullshit. That's not how you want your firehouse to be, right? You want it to be a place where, you know, and I think I read this, I'm not sure if it was Frank Mancuso who put it out. Maybe it's Mark Van Oppen, I can't remember. But basically, culture is how your people feel about Monday morning on Sunday night.
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. And I've had my days where I didn't want to go into work, but most every day I look forward to it. So, again, like we talked about earlier, ebbs and flows as far as that goes. And the commitment level and those things all based upon on how the day-to-day operations are perceived.
Go ahead, Dick.
No, I was just going to say, I think, you know, you're going to have certainly ups and downs. You're going to have seasons. But I think collectively, you know, when you look at the whole picture, that's really what you're looking at. That's how you know, it's like the stock market, right? I mean, if you have more ups than downs, it's good, right? I think that's you know, when you're doing an examination of your personal life, your work life, whatever it is, you know, certainly there's going to be days where you're like, man, I really just don't want to go to work today. But if that's the prevailing mindset all the time, there's something wrong culturally. There's something wrong in your firehouse, in your department, whatever it may be. If guys, you know, are abusing sick leave because they just don't want to be there, right? They just need a mental health day. If that becomes a thing, like where it's okay, every once in a while, whatever. But if you got a guy that you can predict, like he's good for two a month, he's going to call out or whatever, like, you know, or when, you know, you see people calling out when certain people are on shift, like, oh, I don't want to work with that guy. And then they'll call out because they don't want to work with that officer. Or they don't want to work with that, you know, crew member. That's something that should prompt us to go investigate a little bit and figure out, hey, what's going on here? Why I've noticed every time that you're supposed to work with this guy, you call out, or every, you know, you've been calling out, you know, a couple times a month now for the last 6-8 months, and that's not like you, you know. And that's being in tune with your people, right? Understanding, okay, something's going on here where they feel like they need you know, 10 days a month is too much, or it's just like they can't do 10 days a month. Like, you know, something going on in their personal life. Is there something in the firehouse that's making them distant, that's making them not want to be there? You know, when we're talking balance and culture and those things, like, you know, maybe that's the problem. Maybe something's out of balance at home. Maybe something's out of balance in the firehouse. And, you know, or maybe there's a clash there with expectations and personalities. But I think to be effective, like we can't just ignore those things until they boil over. Because that's what firefighters do. We let it fester, like Sean said. We let it build. And then finally, when it does boil over, then it's a huge ordeal, right? And guys are, you know, shouting at each other, telling each other to go pound sand, like, you know, all that kind of stuff. We've got to do better about getting, you know, kind of nipping that stuff at the butter. I get it. You know, if we want to have good culture, if we want to have good organizations, you know, we can't just let that stuff, you know, put our head in the sand like an ostrich and let that stuff just kind of boil and boil and boil, because eventually it is going to impact the mission. It is going to impact the culture. It is going to impact, you know, the team dynamic and the camaraderie that we love so much about the job. Like all that stuff has to, you know, and that's what we got to ask ourselves, personal inventory. Like, what am I doing to be the man that I need to be at home? For my family, at work, for my you know, crew, you know, am I spread too thin? Am I, you know, not being the guy that knows how to balance work and life? Am I not being the guy that, you know, maybe I'm you know, being too overbearing, or you know, maybe I'm being a dick, you know, maybe I need to, you know, realize like my personal stuff is boiling over to work and it's causing me to be, you know, irritated with people more easily than usual, or whatever that may be. Those are the hard conversations we got to have with ourselves. Those are the conversations I think that we need to have with each other. If we see someone that's out of character, like, hey man, like this is not like you. You know, the last couple months you've really been on edge. Like you bet, you know, mental health is a big thing that's talked about in the fire service now. And so as a captain, Jeremy, how important is it for you to be kind of in tune with your people? What's going on with them? I think I know the answer to the question, but obviously you're seeing this on an intimate level every time you're at work. You know, you're the guy that's kind of supposed to be overseeing your folks and make sure the job gets done. But do you ever, you know, catch those little things? Like, you know, you could tell something's off with them that day, or maybe that, you know, that, I don't know. I mean, for me, like, I think sometimes we overlook that stuff. It's easy to be like, ah, they're just being, you know, they're just being a dick today. Well, why? Why are they in such a bad mood? Is that something that you try to kind of hone in on, or do you feel like that's something that is a service like we struggle with to focus on? Because it's hard, right? Those are hard conversations. It's easy to talk tactics. It's a whole different animal when you got to talk to someone about, you know, their money situation or their relationship that's struggling or their kids that are sick or whatever.
It's certainly, you know, I always say the job is easy. People are hard. That's one of the things that with the group that I work with now, most of us have been together for probably 5 years. So we know each other very well. I can tell in the mornings when they walk in the door, if something's up or not, you know, do they had a bad night at home? Do they not sleep well? There's certain ways that they normally act and respond. And if there's, it's off, I can tell as they walk through the door or that first conversation that I have with them and how they respond. So to follow up with how to handle that, man, you got to have those conversations. And, you know, if one of the guys tells me, hey, you know, my son, he's been sick all night and I didn't get a whole lot of sleep. Like, man, go take it easy. Go take a nap. You know, we'll take care of everything else that's going on. Make sure your gear's set up. Make sure your pack's ready to go. Everybody else has got the truck for you. Don't worry about it. So you have to be able to have those moments with the guys so that they will trust you and be able to open up in that regard. But yeah, working with the crew that I have, like I said, I know right away if something's up with them and I'm able to pull them aside and have that conversation. And because of the relationship that I have developed with each of them, more often than not, they're willing to talk with me and tell me, you know, what's going on. And that way I can give them the space that's needed or give them the help that's needed if it is something serious going on. You know, you talked about mental health. There's several resources out there. Blake Stinnett with Nextrung lives in the – he just recently moved, but he's still very close to the community that I work in. So that's a huge resource that we could call upon if there is something serious in that regard. And members of our organization have talked with Blake and some of the people that he has. So it's beneficial to be able to do that. And the network that we've all created doing the things that we do on the fire service has given us the ability to reach out to others that are like-minded and be able to help solve some of those problems that people may be facing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, having the ability to have some sort of crew continuity aids in that, right? Like, I don't know how you guys are in your departments, but, you know, like we get assigned to a station and things like that. But like to actually truly have like continuity with a crew is kind of hard for us because, you know, somebody calls out, then somebody's getting floated to another station and it's just mix and match. So, you know, you'll work with your crew, but you're not necessarily with your crew every single day. Like I could go an entire month without being at my assigned station with my crew and I'm working with different crews throughout that whole point. Right. So I think when you have an assigned crew, an assigned station, it's the same people every day, barring the fact that maybe somebody's on vacation or called out sick, then that definitely helps build those relationships, you know, and it's hard when you don't have that because, you know, you think you might just start to get to know somebody and then they're gone for a month or two, or maybe they're working on a different shift now because that shift was low and they had to balance that out, you know, and you know, so it's, we have things that kind of help destroy that continuity, so to speak, you know, and when you have it, man, I think it's such a beautiful thing because like you said, you've been with the same crew, what, 5 years, Jeremy? So like that's 5 years of really having those conversations, getting to see everybody's skill levels, getting to see like their strengths, their weaknesses, like just truly like getting to form those bonds. And that matters. It matters on the fire ground. It matters in the firehouse. It matters off duty, you know? So I think as a fire service, you know, we need to do better too of getting to that point where we can create environments where those relationships can foster.
It's shift continuity is huge. Crew continuity is huge. At our station, I said earlier, we have three apparatus that respond out. We may have to move people from rig to rig, but we all train together. We all eat together. We all do those things together. So even though you're not riding the same piece that you did last shift, you're still with the same group of individuals. And for the most part, you do ride the same apparatus, but that having that, that shift continuity and being able to stay with those individuals. So you, we know what type of guy that you are. We know the type of shift that you had last shift. And I may move you around on an apparatus that, that it might not be beat up on as much as the one that you were on last day. Having the ability to do those things is huge. And that too builds the trust. They know that you're going to take care of them in that regard so that they can, you know, get that little bit of downtime or get that rest that may be needed if they had a rough couple of days off at home.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll be at about an hour and a half now, something like that, right? So we're going to do the rapid fire questions, right? So I already asked you one of mine, but typically what we do is we each ask three questions in about 60 seconds or so. Just answer it the best of your ability. And you know, that's kind of how we generally wrap up the show. So my first question for you, since I only have two now, is it's kind of twofold. What piece of advice would you have to somebody new to the fire service and also for somebody that's into the job, like that really hard charger, that person that like takes the training, just really soaks everything up and wants to be the best that they possibly can?
So for the first part of it, someone new to the fire service is soak it up, enjoy the ride. I mean, the fire service has been very rewarding for me. And my family does not want for much because of it. I don't make a ton of money, but I can provide for them. Take opportunities to learn as much as you can. Be engaged. Ask questions that are appropriate questions. And like I said, just be a sponge. Learn as much of it as you possibly can. As far as that engaged firefighter that wants to train and be the best that they possibly can, the whole conversation or the purpose of this podcast was about balance. Make sure that while you're bettering yourself, you're still able to take care of your family, take care of your responsibilities that you have away from the fire service, like we've talked about. It's vitally important to make sure you're doing both. If you don't, burnout is a very real thing. You will experience it. And then, and as high as you have been flying engaged, you could just as quickly become disconnected and be detrimental to yourself and to the organization that you work for.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll add one into that. And it's really my own personal failure that I've learned from, but November was 19 years in the fire service for me. So made a lot of mistakes, still continue to make mistakes. And the most important thing is to learn from those, right? So for me, I wasn't always that like fired up into the job person. That came for me later into my career when I realized that a good majority of my career was wasted because I was screwing off and I just cared more about being liked and part of one of the guys than I actually probably did about what I was able to do. You know, and I don't want to say that I was a shitty fireman by any means, but I was definitely not in a place where I had a good mindset about learning and wanting to train. So having gotten bit by that bug later in my career made me realize like there's a lot of things we don't know. And those people that continue to go to these trainings and fine tune themselves, it's not an ego thing. I guess it can be for some. But I think the most important thing is like when people are looking at you and they think that, right? They think, oh, he thinks they're better than us or she thinks they're better than us because they do all this other stuff and they're always talking about the fire service and they're always doing this. I think it's important to have a good approach with it, right? Like nobody's going to want you to hear you come into the firehouse every day and just talk about training and or the job. Like they expect you to talk about other things. Right. And they certainly don't want to hear all the time, like what you think could be better versus like how bad we're doing something, you know? So like you said, that there's that balance there. So my advice for somebody who is engaged and like into the job is there's a time and a place to make waves, but largely just be a good person. Like just go to work, you know, everybody knows who you are and what you're about and that's fine, but you don't have to shove it down everyone's throat 24/7, you know, just come in and try and be part of the crew and humble yourself and realize like you might be good at a certain thing or a few things, but you're not good at everything. And maybe somebody that you work with is good at that thing. So like, just understand, like you don't have to be the go-to person all the time. You don't have to carry that bravado about you that like you're some big badass firefighter. 'Cause you're not, you know, just be normal, man, and share when you have the ability to share and just go along with it. You know, it's going to be a lot easier for you that way. So not saying that you should kind of curb your passion or drive to do things, but our approach can get us in a lot of trouble sometimes. So just be mindful of that. Can't really say anything else about your advice about the new person coming in. There's a lot to learn and there's a lot to learn what not to do as well. So, you know, like you said, just be a sponge, man, eyes wide open, ears wide open. Just try and take it all in. And, my second question for you what has been the hardest challenge for you so far in your fire service career? And what helped you overcome that?
For me, Nick and I talked before we got started was imposter syndrome. You know, not only in what's going on with FAST, talking with you guys today, being a captain of for my department, you know, sure, I've worked, I've studied, I've trained so that I could be a better firefighter, so that I could be the person that they call upon to hold this position and to do those things. But I look back constantly at myself and like, how did I get here? And what do I deserve, or how do I deserve to be the person that's talking with Nick Pepper and Sean Duffy, to be the captain that's making these decisions? Obviously, working through that has been difficult. I still pinch myself every day when I get the opportunity to go and do some of these training events, and I'm going to give a lecture on Friday. I told Nick about earlier, and I'm like, why are these guys asking me to do these things? And imposter syndrome is very real. But to speak to that, if you have a good message, if you're out there preaching, bettering the fire service and trying to instill knowledge or make someone else see something from a different light that may make them better, that's how you deal with it, is just by knowing that you're out there trying to add value to the fire service and share what knowledge that you may have that someone else doesn't.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I'll touch on it briefly and then I'll turn it over to Nick for his questions. I think that's something that, you know, anybody who cares about the job probably suffers from. And if you don't, you know, good for you, or maybe you're just ignorant to the fact that, you know, that's existing. But I find it interesting to me, like, you know, the people that are truly humble about this and that want to leave the fire service better than they found it, that are in it for the right reasons, they don't ever truly think about like the monetary aspects of things, or, you know, like Facebook fame, so to speak, or any of that stuff. They're just doing their thing because they care, right? Like you said, I find it interesting that our fire service bitches about people who don't care, but then when people take action, they also bitch about those individuals, like somehow they're not vetted enough to have these conversations or whatever, right? And a lot of that stuff is kind of weird to me, because there's a lot of assumptions made, right? Like, who does that person think they are? What do they possibly know? Or they don't work in this suburb or this city that goes to, you know, all these fires. Like, okay, that's great. But knowledge is knowledge, and so is experience, and everybody's got their own, right? Some might have more than others, and that's great if you're fortunate to have that. But at the end of the day, it really should be about the message. And if the message is valid, right, and it can be vetted, and that individual is passionate about it, and they've taken the time out of their lives to truly study this and put it into application, both in training and real-world application, then I think we need to start cutting some people some slack and realizing, like, hey, you're sitting out here and you're casting stones at this individual. Well, if you're so good, what are you doing? Right? Why don't you do, if you could do it better, then why don't you? Right? All these things. And I hate that, because, like, you feel like, we'll take somebody like yourself, Jeremy, like, if that was you, right, you already have this, like, thought of, like, how I don't deserve this. Why am I here? And now you have all these people that are just trying to destroy it. And now you have this self-doubt that starts creeping in, like, shit, am I truly, you know, this person? Should I really be able to do this? Maybe I'm right. Maybe I shouldn't be on this platform. And then you just stop, because it's easier to do that than to take all the shots and all that other stuff. I want to encourage people to stand their ground, right? Like, dig in deep. If you care about this, and it's, I get it, the imposter syndrome, that's great. But if you have a message that's important and it means something to you and you're able to develop it and people are listening and people can benefit from it, don't waver because other people are jealous or whatever the fact is that they want. Maybe you've stepped on their toes because you're teaching a topic that they teach, and they travel the country to teach, and somehow they feel like you're not worthy of teaching it, but they are. Like, fuck that shit. Just be it, you know, send it. This fire service exists because of all of us that put time, effort, and energy into it, not by a single individual or a single group of people, right? So this is 100% a team effort. And I'm going to say, like, if you have that imposter syndrome, like you said, Jeremy, you were able to overcome it and stuff like that, stick with it, right? And maybe you don't have the imposter syndrome, but you're just getting shit on all the time. Who cares? Stick with it, because the fact of the matter is that you're drawing attention to yourself because you're standing for something, and then all those other people are standing for nothing. So don't let it deter you. Keep moving forward. You know, your time and your passion and stuff will pay off, even if it's only with a couple people. You know, you never know how far your reach is. You could be reaching somebody you don't even know, you know, who you've never even met. So don't waste those opportunities. Stick with your passion and have purpose. And I think over time you'll overcome some of those insecurities you got. That's all you, Nick. You're up.
Hey, I was just enjoying it. So my questions are pretty straightforward. First question I got for you, Jeremy, is what is your favorite assignment on the fire ground?
So being a captain, I can put myself pretty much anywhere, but I choose the engine more often than not. I enjoy pushing down a hallway. I enjoy taking that new firefighter and letting them be on the nozzle with me with a tick right over their shoulder and showing them on the camera, hey, this is where it's at, you know, hit it here, and showing them a little bit of the image and sharing that experience with them. As we talked earlier, them being successful on the fire ground is going to be huge for their career. So taking that opportunity and being that boss on that first line in is huge. I really enjoy to get to share that experience with newer firefighters. And then, you know, as we continue to build our team cohesion and doing that, I really, to me, that's just where I like to be, is riding on that engine and doing that.
Amen to that. Man after my own heart. Question number two, as a captain, what is your favorite training drill?
So a lot of what I do in the fire station comes from what I do with FAST. I like to teach the firefighter rescue components that we do and the different things. And it helps to build some of the things that we teach when we go out on these conferences. I test out new tactics, new techniques that we discuss on the guys at the station. So firefighter rescue, firefighter CPR, those things are things that don't often get done. We'll do RIT drills. We'll do different things like that, but the drill never finishes. Anytime you're doing that type of training, you should finish it with firefighter CPR, those things. So I really lean towards what we do with FAST. That's sort of the niche that I've fallen into, and that's mm-hmm. where I continue to sort of expand my horizons and learn with the guys that I'm working with.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely a skill set that if you don't practice, you know, we did a RIT drill couple weeks back. And, you know, if you don't do it, like if you don't practice, man, like when your heart rate's up and you're trying to move a down firefighter, you know, it's amazing how those little nuances can turn in, you know, it's dominoes, right? Like, oh, I can't get to the webbing, or I can't get this, I can't move, you know, get their air pack where I need it or whatever. And especially, you know, we were doing waste belt conversions, and it's amazing. If you don't practice that stuff with gloves on in that environment, how difficult that can be for guys. Just as something as simple as that. But you know, I think it's always good to hear, especially like, you know, we had a lot of company and chief officers on here. It's like hearing those little things, because it gives me fuel to go back and hammer up. You know, my boss is like, hey man, we need to try this, try that, you know. And it's always good to hear people's, you know, kind of what their go-to is, what their niche, the thing that they really enjoy the most. And not that it's not all important, but I think if you got something that, you know, is you find that little groove, it's always fun. And the nice thing about those kind of drills is you can typically do them in half an hour in the bay, right? You can do a lot of that stuff in your training tower, quick drills, things like that, you know, burn a bottle of air and get back in service. Question number three, what is one book you would recommend every firefighter to read?
So I've got a couple that I think are really good for a company officer. Small Unit Leadership. It's a book on leading Marines is actually where it came from. And a lot of things that in firefight and war that correlate to the fire service. I think that it's huge. I don't, the author escapes me at the moment, but I think that it's very valuable for company officers to read that and to get some ideas on how to deal with some of those personalities that are in the fire service, because in a lot of ways we're a paramilitary organization. So there is a lot of things that are similar in that regard. But for everyone, I believe Sebastian Unger's Tribe, it talks about how humans strive and look for certain things, how we don't mind hardships, but we actually prefer to work through challenges and things like that. But we don't want to be we don't want to experience the feeling of not being necessary. And today, the modern world is made people very irrelevant as a whole. So I think that it speaks to how to overcome some of those situations. As fast paced as things are, individuals often get lost in the mix. So we need to make sure that we are building our tribe and we're working to include all of those people that are important to us in our lives.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. You know, first of all, those are two books that nobody in the recent year or so is thrown out there. So I like it a little different. Have to look up that. It's a Small Unit Leadership.
That's right. I'll text you the title. I've got it in my bookcase. I'll text you the author. So it's an older book. I think it came from the Vietnam era, but it's still a lot of good information in there.
Yeah, definitely have to check that out. So bonus question, since I'll try and only give you two. Okay. This is, what is one thing you're most looking forward to in 2024?
Continued opportunities to get out and spread the message of the fire service with others. I'm looking forward to the challenges and the new opportunities that my kids are going to be experiencing. Just living life, man. I try to enjoy every day, so I can't pinpoint, you know, one specific thing that I'm looking forward to. I just want to get out there and have a good time and enjoy time with my family, both my actual family and the fire service family as well.
Yeah. Well said, man. Well said. Well, that's a wrap. It's been a great conversation, Jeremy. Definitely honored to have you on the show. You know, you're doing good stuff. Enjoy watching you, you guys crush it out there with FAST, with what you're doing in the fire service. But I've really, really enjoyed the conversation. I think this is an important, you know, we talked a lot about balance today. And for those that are listening to the show, do some self, you know, reflection, do some inventory. Are you living a balanced life? Are you, you know, giving you know, your family and your and other priorities, the due diligence that they need and require, you know, are you one-sided? Or maybe you're that firefighter who's got disenfranchised and you're, you know, you've kind of just kind of going through the motions at work and you're not into the job and you're not, you know, you've got the other aspects, the hobbies and the family stuff, and that's dialed in, but you're just, you're not really there when you're at work. You're just waiting for the time clock to punch out and go home. I would encourage you, find that spark again, find that niche, do some soul searching, find that thing that kind of gives you that purpose at work too, so that there is that balance. I mean, we should be obviously spending time with family and friends and having hobbies, but when we're at work, be there, be present, be there now, right? When you're at work, are we giving our all? Are we giving our best effort? And I'm not saying that you're going to 16 fire conferences a year on your own time and dime, or, you're reading every single article that's ever published out there. I mean, I get that, there are people that, first of all, if they're going to 16 conferences a year and doing all that other stuff, chances are there may be some time strain there with the family and the other things. There may not be some balance, and who knows? I mean, obviously it's a lot to make it out there, but once or twice a year, get out of your bubble. Like, it's like we were talking about earlier, right? Just get out of your bubble, man. Like, go get your battery charged up, go to a conference, go to a seminar, pick up an article a couple times a month, read an article in fire engineering or firehouse, or, listen to a podcast, do something to invest in the job too, because it's important, right? And when you're at work, again, be into the job, be, whatever your department's got going on, be a team player, pay attention to your people, work hard, play hard, enjoy each other's company. Like you said, enjoy the ride, soak it up, because it's a short ride in the grand scheme of things. I mean, you've been on the job for 24 years, Jeremy. How fast has it gone by?
Extremely fast.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is so important, like I said, to find that balance, work and life, find that balance in the firehouse, and enjoy the heck out of the ride, because, man, like, it goes by fast. And before you know it, the kids are growing up, you're punching the retirement ticket, and life is shifting gears entirely. So, how do you want to be remembered, right? Do you want your, kids to feel like you were all in on them? Your wife feel like she, you prioritized her? Do you want your brothers and sisters to feel like you were the guy that invested in them, not just as firefighters, but as people? It reminds me of that Tim McGraw song that, what is it? Standing Room Only. We're talking about, like, how do you want to be remembered? When you're at your funeral, you want it to be standing room only. You want people to be like, man, this guy cared, like, and make sure it's the right people, right? Invest in the right places, the right people. Don't listen to the mutts when they bark. Keep doing your thing, make the fire service better, make your family better, and at the end of the day, enjoy it, because, like I said, in the blink of an eye, it's over, and life moves on, and they're filling your seat with somebody else. So thanks for the conversation, brother. Thank you for taking the time, spent a couple hours with us this morning, sharing some of your passion and wisdom and thoughts. It certainly means a lot to us.
I really appreciate the opportunity. I'm humbled by the experience, for sure. And I just hope that, somebody can get something out of it. And, you guys are doing great things as well. Keep pushing and keep doing what you're doing. And I look forward to seeing you all on the road.
Ditto, my friend. Ditto. So, Sean, you got anything before we close her out, brother?
No, I think that's it. I know I was a little late. So, I mean, I enjoyed the conversation that I had since I got on. But, for anybody listening, just fire service is about ebbs and flows, right? It's seasons. You're gonna have some good ones. You're going to have some not so good ones. But whatever's going on, whether it be good or bad, don't let it define you, and don't let it destroy you. Just be true to who you are and keep chugging along and try and make the fire service a better place. And, everything will fall in line. And, just make sure that you keep the number one priority in your life, which is your family. So that's really, I know we kind of beat that to death, but we can talk about it all we want, but it really comes down to action. So, don't be that person that just says, I will. Actually do something about it. And if you're in that position now, or you're just kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, sometimes the best thing you can do is just make a decision. And it's okay to step away from things for a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of regroup, recharge, because like you alluded to earlier, Nick, and you did to Jeremy too, like if you're not yourself, you're not good to anyone, right? So just make sure that you're coming to work mentally and physically fit and able to take on all the things that require you there, and then leave that shit at work, man. Come home and spend it with your family. And, you know, you can really only truly focus on one thing at a time. So whatever that thing in front of you is, like, focus on that. And when it's done, move it off and let it be and focus on the next, you know. Try not to take on too much stuff because it'll sink the shit out of you. So that's it. That's all I got. That's my closing remarks. So.
Yeah, well said, man. Like I said, hopefully you guys out there listening, take some nuggets away from this, you know, do some self reflection and introspection and, you know, make sure that your priorities are right. Make sure that your balance is there and that, you know, you give the job its due work and effort, but do the same thing for your family and in your faith and the things that you're involved with. Like, it is being true to yourself, right? Being true to your values and the things that matter in life, and not letting, you know, like I said, we had this conversation with Mike Galliano a while back about that, you know, these seasons, right? Sometimes the job takes more, sometimes it's the family, and it's this back and forth balancing act, right? Like you're on a tightrope trying to balance it out. Just be humble enough to recognize when you're out of balance. Be humble to, you know, enough to say, hey, you know what? Like you said, Sean, I need to take a step back, or maybe I need to take a couple irons out of the fire because I'm not being effective for anybody now because I'm pouring from an empty cup, right? And I'm just checking boxes. That's certainly not fulfilling in any aspect of life, whether it's at work, whether it's at home. If you really want to enjoy what you're doing, then you have to be able to, you know, you have to kind of, like I said, you have to fill your cup up to give to others, right? You have to be able to do that. And sometimes that means coming apart and resting a while, right? Taking a deep breath, getting your thoughts collected, right? You know, figuring out what's important. It's amazing how hard it is sometimes to say no, to say, hey, you know what? No, I can't do that. It's just, I got too many things going on. It's hard for us. All three of us sitting here, I can tell you, like, you know, you're into it. You want to be effective, but don't forget, like, you know, first things first, first family first. And don't forget your brothers and sisters in the fire service, right? That at your fire department, you know, start at home. It starts at home, right? It doesn't matter if I'm teaching abroad, doing all this stuff, you know, and traveling. If I neglect my brothers and sisters at home, it's equally as bad. So, you know, give your all each day, live life, enjoy it. With that, man, Jeremy, like I said, this has really been a good, I think a really good conversation, because it's not your typical, we're talking sexy tactics and all that kind of stuff. We're talking stuff that's practical in life and leadership in this human relations. But if we don't have that stuff right, all the other stuff goes awry, right? It doesn't matter how badass of a firefighter we are, if we suck as a person and people don't want to be around us, our family, you know, kids don't want to be around us, like our wife's fed up with us, like all that stuff, it all come crashing down. Trust me, we've seen it. We've seen guys that we know that get out of balance, and we watch the crash and burn. Sometimes we watch the burnout. We watch the you know, things unravel. And so, don't be that guy, right?
Sometimes you live it, and sometimes you come out better on the other side of it. But that process of going through it is not a fun place to be. So, speaking from experience.
Yes, sir. Sir. Well, that being said, you guys have a great afternoon. It's been fun. Get this thing edited, and should be by the end of the day, should be out there on all the favorite podcast platforms. So make sure to check out episode 45. I'm Nick. That's Sean. This is episode 45 in the books. Jeremy, real quick, if people want to get a hold of you, what's one way they can get a hold of you?
Social media, Facebook, Instagram. My email is jeremy.mathis@fastrescuesolutions.com.
Perfect. So that being said, if you guys have questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to Jeremy. I'm sure he'd be more than happy to chat with you. But you guys have a great afternoon, like I said, and enjoy this time. I know it's holiday season, so enjoy some time with your families. And Jeremy, stay warm. I know you guys are still thawing out down there.
Appreciate
All right, man. See you, bro.
See you guys.